But we are very dull in this world. We are very dull. Why? Because we bite the glass again and again. Blood coming everywhere. But we never ask, well, I want to meet the manager. Who's managing this material world? Who's in charge? I want to file my complaint. So Vedic teaching is first thing. Now you've been biting the glass for so long. Stop doing that. Don't be like a camel. You know camels? Camels, there's nothing to eat in the desert, so they find a tree of thorns. And they chew on the thorns. And they're chewing and chewing. And they're feeling pretty thirsty. But now, they have some really juicy thorns. And their throat is no longer parched. They're feeling some satisfaction of their thirst. But what is that? The thorns are not juicy. Only the thorns are cutting them. And they're tasting their own blood. But the camels, they are not renowned for their IQ. They never went to college or anything. So they don't understand these things. Unlike us, we are so educated. And we have understood that the attempt to enjoy this material world is a futile endeavor. You cannot win. So, with asking this question, what am I doing here? Is there any meaning to this? Is there any method in the madness of the existence in which I find myself? This is first teaching of the Vedas. So, I'm sure you're all very cheered up so much now. This is major day. No, actually, even though the facts are staring us in the face every time we pick up a newspaper. You read the newspaper. How much good news is there? How much? Oh, very little. Very little. So, even though the facts are staring us in the face, we don't want to admit that this world is a place of suffering because we don't have any alternatives. This is why. If you don't have any alternatives, and you think, I'm stuck here, this world is all that there is, then you just cannot admit it. Just like you spend all your money on a car. I'm giving this example. So, push the Nanda Prabhu. So, you spend all your money... you spend all your money on a car. And there's no warranty or anything. And then when the car starts to go wrong, then you keep making excuses. Well, actually, it was a good buy. It's not that bad. I just have to fix the tires, and then the next week... Well, I just have to fix the transmission, and then the next week... Well, I just have to fix the carburetor. And then the next week, I just have to change the axles. And then all your friends say, how's your car? Well, it's great. Pretty good. Why? Because that person, he doesn't want to admit it. Because he made a wrong move. He got a bum deal. And now, he's stuck with it. So because we think we're stuck with this life, we don't want to admit it. In fact, not only will we not admit it, but we'll tell others. We'll cheat them, even. So I want to give one example. Once, there was a sleepy village. Little village. In India. So, nothing happened in this village. It was really monotonous, boring kind of place. So one day, all the villagers woke up in the morning, and they saw that all over the town, there were posters everywhere. The posters were saying, the greatest show on earth is coming to your town. Everyone became excited. The greatest show on earth is coming to our town. Come on, nothing happens in our town. We're so lucky the greatest show on earth is coming. Everyone was talking about it. The greatest show on earth, the greatest show on earth, the greatest show on earth. Everyone. Here and there. So then they were waiting, nothing happened. After a few weeks, one morning everyone woke up and they saw in the middle of the village square, there was a very big tent. A big circus tent, marquee. And outside the tent there was a sign. The greatest show on earth. Okay? So, then all the villagers, they came out from their homes and they all gathered around. The entrance to the tent. There were hundreds of them, and they were waiting. What's going on? We want to see the greatest show on earth. So then after some time, the ringmaster, he came out from the tent. And he spoke to all the people. He said, today you are very fortunate. Because you have this rare opportunity to see the greatest show on earth. Everyone was excited. So you can see it, but one thing. You can only come one at a time. And the price is... $1,000. Then everyone was whispering in the crowd, everyone was looking at each other, what to do? What should we do now? Then one person in the crowd, particularly gregarious person, an extrovert person. And he was always looking for an opportunity to do something that his friends would be really impressed with and think he was a great guy. Hmm?
He called him an early adopter.
Early adopter, okay.
Right.
So, one person, he was eager to get some fame and reputation and impress all of his friends and the ladies and everything who were there. So he came forward. Hmm? He quickly ran to the ATM and drew out $1,000. And then he came forward, he said, okay, I'll be the first one. And bravo, bravo, good show. Hmm? So he came forward and he gave his $1,000 in the hands of the ringmaster. And the ringmaster said, my dear friend, walk this way. So then he took him inside the tent. And when that man got inside, he was so excited. Why? Because he's the first one to see the greatest show on earth. He was thinking, oh boy, I bet everyone's really impressed with me. Hmm? No one will stop talking about me. Hmm? I'll be a legend in my own lifetime. Hmm? So then he was inside the tent and it was completely dark and he was looking around. Hmm? He was so excited. And then he said, the greatest show on earth. Then he heard a voice from inside calling him. Hey you, come here. So gradually he's walking forward. Then all of a sudden, from out of the darkness, he felt something. Slap across his face. Hey, what did you do that for? Boom. Someone hit him again. He went down on the ground. And he got up. Hey, what's going on? Hmm? And then that person grabbed him and threw him down on the ground again and started beating him, pummeling him really hard. Hmm? Punching him again and again. And then he picked him up and he walked him around to the back of the tent and he pushed him out of a flap at the back of the tent. And then he was outside. All the other people were around the front. And then he's like, oh my God, I've been ripped off. How will I ever show my face in public again? Oh, so then he dusted off his cloth, he dusted off the dirt from his suit like that, he straightened his tie, took out his comb, combed his hair, got all really nice again, and then he walked around the front, and all of his friends, the whole crowd were waiting there to see him. Hey, how was it, how was it? He said, it was indescribable. It was brilliant. In fact, I can't express myself how good it was. You have to experience it for yourself. Then there was a riot. Me next. I know everyone was there with their money. I'm next. And the ringmaster was taking the money and taking them in one at a time. And then they would come out. Everyone, what was it like? But they were so embarrassed. They were so humiliated. And their ego was so big, they didn't dare to tell anyone actually what happened. And they all went through it, one after another like this. The greatest show on earth. So this is a very funny story. Yeah? But not so funny. Why? Has a meaning. You are born, and then your parents tell you, oh, now you should go to school, the school is very good. Okay, and then you go, and you have so many problems, you go to college. They tell you, when you leave, what do I do now? Oh, you should get married. Why? This is the greatest show on earth. You parents and the older person, they all went to school, they all went to college, they all got mad, and they all got beaten up completely. And they all suffered like hell. But they're just too proud. They'll tell you, well, what is it like? Well, it's indescribable. You're just going to have to experience it for yourself. And in this way, everyone is going on in life, and they're just suffering and waiting. But everyone is afraid to admit this fact to each other. Why? Because they don't know that there's any alternative. They don't know. So, when we understand this fact...
Can we hear about Goloka now?
When we understand this fact, then what happens? Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Therefore, after understanding that the greatest show on earth is not all it's made out to be. I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to burst a bubble. But...
Thank you.
When we understand that, then... Brahma Jigyasa, now we have to ask some questions. What am I doing here? What is Brahma, the absolute truth? What is that thing? So the first lesson we should know is something in regard to our own identity. Who am I? We should know that, first of all, our problem comes from not knowing who we are. We don't understand that we are not this body. This physical body is not us. We think that this is us. But actually, the body is made of matter. It's made out of whatever you eat. When you were born, your body was very small. How did it become so big? Because you filled it with french fries. That's why. You took so many elements of this world, fat and carbon and vitamin C and all of these things, and you kept putting them in your body until it got bigger and bigger and bigger. So try to understand that all these french fries and all these pills and things that you are taking are not you. Even though when you mix them all together and you stick them inside this body, it feels like this is you. This body is not you. Because matter is dead. It has no feelings. There are two substances. One is called matter and one is called spirit. How can we identify them? That substance which has the power to feel and the power to desire is called spirit. And that substance which cannot feel anything and which doesn't have any desires is called matter. Just like this microphone stand. This is made of matter. If I pinch it, doesn't feel anything. Why? There's no spirit there. But this body, if someone will cut your body, then you will scream. You feel it. Why? Because inside this body there's a particle of spirit that is you, the soul. And the soul, just as the sun is in the sky and illuminates all directions by its light, in the same way, the soul, which is a particle of spirit situated in the region of the heart, spreads light in the form of consciousness all over the body. Therefore, if you touch any part of your body, you can feel it. If you remove any part of your body, don't try this at home, but if you remove one of your hands and put it on the table, if anyone will shake your hand, I guarantee you'll not feel it. Because there's disconnection from the soul. Someone can say that, oh no, this is only some, there's some sensor in your finger, and that makes one electrical message, and that goes through all the nerve endings, and that's passed like this, and then some synapses fire in your brain, and then you feel it. But that also doesn't answer the question either. Because all the atoms in your body through which the electrical currents are passing, they don't feel anything either. And your brain is also just a pile of chemicals. How will it feel anything? How will it become aware of its own identity? It is something quite impossible. So the soul in the body causes the body to have the power to perceive and also desires. This is the first thing we have to know. If a person is very educated in physics, mathematics, chemistry, psychology, and all of these things, but they cannot understand who they are, I am not this body, then they are in complete ignorance. Complete ignorance. Because this is the ABC, this is the first lesson. I am not this physical body. Once, there was a king, his name was Janak Maharaj. So he was very philosophical and he liked to meet with many sages. He liked to invite the sages to come to his palace and have a conference to discuss enlightenment, self-realization. So he sent his messengers out to advertise, all sages of the world, please come to my council and we will have a festival of spiritual understanding. So then the date was fixed and all the rishis and munis, all the sages from around the universe, not only from this planet, because those who are great yogis, they can also fly. So they were flying in from other planets. And they came and they assembled in the council of Janak Maharaj to have a meeting, a discussion about spiritual understanding. So at that time, there was one rishi, his name was Astavakra. So Astavakra, he's called Astavakra. That means eight crooked things. In his body is deformed. So it's crooked in eight places. He's all twisted out of shape completely, in a mess. So his name is Astavakra. And because of his deformity, it's very difficult for him to walk. So when he heard the news, he set out. But it took him a long time to ride in that assembly. And he came late. And he walked through the stick in a very peculiar way, kind of like this. So after walking for so many weeks, he gradually arrived in that assembly of the rishis. And as he entered into the palace of the king, then he was walking. Like this. So you are all laughing and smiling. Nothing changes. Everyone in that assembly, they're also laughing and smiling. And gradually he made his way into the middle of the assembly and he stopped. And all eyes were on him. Then, when he stopped moving and he was looking around in a very grave way, everyone stopped laughing and smiling. And they're wondering, who is this person? So then he began to speak. He said, today I have been disappointed. I've been sorely disappointed. Why? Because I had heard the news that in the council of Janak Maharaj there will be an assembly of sages, and they will meet together to have a discussion, a conference of spiritual understanding, and have walked a very long distance, undergoing many difficulties to come here, expecting to find a meeting of enlightened personalities. But instead, I've become disappointed because, by accident, it appears that I have stumbled upon a convention of shoemakers. I stumbled upon a convention of shoemakers and cobblers. Everyone was struck with wonder. What is he saying? We are all riches. We are all striving for enlightenment. Why is he saying that we are only like shoemakers? He said to them, those who make shoes from leather, they are not educated. They don't know about spiritual life. But they do know one thing. What do they know about? They know about skin. That is their field of expertise. They know about leather. They know about skin. So I thought that I came to an assembly of enlightened persons, but I think I've come to a convention of shoemakers. Because you only know about skin. You're looking at my body. My body is ugly. My body is deformed. And when you see the very peculiar way in which I walk, then you begin to smile and laugh. Why? Because you only know skin. You're seeing my body, but you're not seeing my soul. I am not this physical body. My physical body has many ailments, but I am not this body. I am the soul within. My soul is transcendental. My soul is eternal, spiritual, very, very beautiful, and possessed of many astonishing qualities. But you're not seeing this. You're only seeing skin. So today, I'm disappointed. All the sages in that assembly, they were humiliated. They felt very embarrassed. What are we doing? We are meant to be cultivating spiritual knowledge, but we only see the body. So this is our position in this world. We see, this person is black, this person is white, this person is yellow, this person is male. Female is thinking, this person is male, I have attraction for him. Male person is thinking, oh, this person is female, I am attracted to her. What is this? This is only ignorance. Not seeing the soul, not seeing the person, only seeing skin. So on the path of self-realization, the first lesson we'll have to digest and assimilate in our life is to understand, I am not this body and neither is anyone else. This body is changing. First like a baby, then a child, then an adult, then a geriatric, and then in a box and down you go. So this body is always changing, but the soul is eternal. The body is subject to the influence of time. So are you a subject to the influence of time? The soul? Never. How do you know? Oh, a very easy thing. I'll give an example. If you are standing, if you are in an aeroplane, the aeroplane is moving at so many hundreds of miles per hour, but you feel as if you're not moving. Why? Because everything that you can see is moving relative to you. The guy in the seat next to you is also moving at the same speed as you. The TV screen, the air hostess, your ginger ale, your duty-free goods, they're all moving at the same speed as you. So you feel like you're not moving when you're on the airplane. But if someone's on the ground, then how do they feel? Wow, that plane is really moving. Why? Because they're not in it. They're outside of the airplane. So in the same way, you experience the movement of time. Do you experience past, present and future? Yes. Why? Because you're not in it. You are outside. You are transcendental to time and space, and therefore you can experience the movements of time and space. Because the soul is not part of that system. It is outside. If you were part of the time scale, then you would not understand what is time. But because you're outside of time, you can see the flow of time, past, present and future. So you have no beginning, you have no end, you are transcendental, you are not this body, you are the spirit soul. But you find yourself in this material world. Why? Is there any reason? Is there any cause? Yes. This material world is a facility. It has been created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give you a chance to fulfill selfish desire. In this world, everyone is selfish. Either selfish, they work for themselves, otherwise, for those who are in connection with them. Extended selfishness. My wife, my house, my family, my country, my planet. I want to get along with everyone. Why? For my happiness. So, in this world, everyone is selfish, and therefore they are here. This world is a facility where one can engage in material activities of selfish gratification to take from your environment. But the spiritual world is a different nature completely. Those whose hearts are pure, whose love is unconditional, who have no selfishness at all, they are fit to reside in the transcendental world, the spiritual world. So the process of spiritual life, of enlightenment, is not a process of collecting information. I want to become enlightened, so I learn this, and then I learn this, and this, and this, and I'll put it all together, and when I've got the whole picture, I'll be enlightened. No, never. The process of enlightenment is a process of adjusting yourself to give up all selfishness. So that system by which one gives up all material desires and attachments and selfishness, that is called yoga. In most people in the West here, they know about yoga, Ashtanga yoga. How to sit, how to control the breathing and focus the mind. It's called Ashtanga yoga. So the original text of India on Ashtanga yoga is this called Patanjali Yoga Sutra. There the definition of yoga has been described. Yoga citta vritti nirodha. It means that yoga is the system of taking the flow of your consciousness and withdrawing it from the material body and sending it inside, so the consciousness comes to a state where it is no longer absorbed in the lower material energy. That is called yoga. So there are different yoga systems. Some are mechanical, by the controlling the breathing and focusing the mind. And others are more natural. That is called bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, devotional service. When a person never tries to use this world for his selfish ends, but dedicates all things to be used in the service of God, then also his heart becomes purified much more rapidly, much more easily, and his destination is higher also. So, if someone has understood this first principle, I am not this body, then he will have to learn how to withdraw his consciousness from absorption in the material body. It is only a question of absorption. Wherever your mind is absorbed, you'll identify with that. The soul has had many lifetimes. Because we are beyond time, before we are born in this life, we had another life. Before that, another life. And before that, countless millions of lifetimes in this material world. And we'll have so many more until we understand that we are not this body. But someone can say, well, I don't believe that. This is my only life. This body is me. They can say, how could I make such a mistake to think that I was something else other than this body? I could not have been in another lifetime, in another body. Some people raise this objection. But just see, the nature of illusion, it is so thick that any situation you find yourself in, you think that that is real. Every night you go to sleep. And when you're asleep, then you're dreaming. And you have your dream body. But what do you think when you're dreaming? You think this is real. Sometimes when you're asleep in your dream, you go to work or you go to college. Yeah. If you did not think that this was real, then you would not go to work in your dreams. You say, oh, this is just a dream, so I'll take the day off. Why do you go to work in your dream? Because any body you find yourself in, you think this is me and this is real. So when you're asleep, you think this is real. When you're awake, you think this is real. When you die and you take birth again you'll think, oh, this is me. This ignorance is so thick and dense, we never pause to question the reality, so-called reality in which we find ourselves. So, by the yoga system, one can withdraw the consciousness from absorption in the body, then the consciousness becomes pure. And when consciousness is pure, we can understand who am I and what is God. A question may come now. Okay? I am in this world and I understand why. I am here because I am not a fit citizen to be in the spiritual realm. There everyone is pure, they have no selfishness at all. And I am here because I have so many material desires, so many fears and anxieties. Okay, so I want to come out from this world. But we don't have so much belief. Is it real? Is there another dimension? Definitely there is. Definitely. But we will not have. But we don't believe it. Our conviction is not strong. We feel instinctively that, oh, this is everything. This world is all that there is. I don't touch. There is nothing else. So if I will leave behind the things of this world, then, at least in this world, even though I was suffering, at least I had something. And if I'll leave this, then I may end up with nothing. This conception, this doubt, comes from the impurity in the consciousness. If one will take to the process of spiritual life, then as soon as the consciousness starts to clear, then strong understanding and feeling, intuition, just as now intuitively, you know that you are this body. No one taught you this. You didn't have to go to school and study. Who am I? Oh, you are a man. You are so old. And in this body there's so much lust and anger also. You never had to learn this. Did anyone do a course? Has anyone done a course at college? How to be lusty? Did you study this? Then why do you become lusty? You're not this body, but always the sex desires coming again and again. Where did you learn it from? This is intuitive. As soon as the consciousness is polluted, naturally you feel like this. So similarly, when the consciousness is pure, intuitively one can feel that I am not a resident of this world. My home is Golok, planet Golok. Transcendental world.
Can you talk about the Goloka and the
I'm not doing the special request this evening, another day. Okay, so when the heart gradually becomes purified, then the feeling, the intuitive feeling begins to grow. So just, I've been speaking for a long time, but just to conclude our discussion this evening, I want to speak something about feelings. Feelings are really important. Very, very important. We may think that, oh, what is the value of my feelings? The way that I feel inside. Does it have any bearing on the real world? The answer is yes, completely. In this world, everything that you see, from the buildings, the governments, the nations, cars, everything. Everything started like only a feeling, an idea. First there was an idea in someone's mind, and it began to grow. Gradually, they began to act on that feeling, and they have manifested something, and now you are seeing it. Someone designed this. Everything that you see has been designed and made. But everything started from the subtle platform, the platform of feeling. And therefore, this feeling, the feelings that we have in our heart, these are the root cause of our destination, of our destiny, where we will go. For example, now, you have all been born here in America, perhaps some of you were born here in Oregon. Why? Why? Because at the time of your death, in your last life, your heart was possessed of particular feelings. And according to those feelings, in your subtle body, in your mind, your soul was carried to a destination which is corresponding to the way that you feel. Krishna has explained this in Bhagavad Gita. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam chaja tyanti kalevaram samtana vaiti kontiya satatad bhava bhavitaha. Whatever feeling, whatever is the quality of the atmosphere in your mind at the time of your last death, that carried you to the destination in your next life. And therefore we are all different physically, and we've all been born in different physical circumstances, because everyone had a different feeling. Now, the way that your feelings develop in this life will also determine the destination that you will go to in your next life. If you develop very aggressive and angry feelings, then Supreme Lord Krishna, He will give you a chance to fulfill those desires by putting you inside a body where you can fulfill those desires but without making too much disturbance. In your next life you could become a tiger. And then you can vent your anger on others. You can tear them to shreds with your teeth if you want. And in this way you feel really good because that was your mood, angry mood. Otherwise, if you just like to lie around on the beach, surf in the waves a little bit, lounge around on the beach, take it easy, then you can become a seal in your next life. Surfing a little bit, lying around on the beach. Whatever desire you have, there's a body to fulfill that desire. The Vedas tell us that there are 8,400,000 different types of material bodies. And they're all like cars. What car do you want? People who like to race fast, they buy a really fast car. People who have a big family, they get one, you know, Toyota Space Wagon or something, you know, with about 8 different seats full of their kids. People, they like to go right up the mountains, they get 4-wheel drive, like this. So everyone gets a different vehicle according to the desire that they have. So similarly, all the different bodies that we see in this world, they're different vehicles to fulfill the desire that was in the heart of that living entity, in his last life. Those of you who like bungee jumping, then in your next life you can become a spider. Boing. Spiders that spend all day bungee jumping. So there's so many different bodies to fulfill different desires. But we should be intelligent. All of these bodies are temporary. All of these bodies have to grow old and die and undergo the whip of hunger, thirst, disease, old age, fatigue, all of these things. So if we will develop a transcendental feeling, then when we leave this body, we'll have a transcendental body. If our feelings are material, we'll have a material body in the material world. And if we cultivate the feeling, which is spiritual, transcendental, then we'll have a transcendental body in the transcendental world. So the process of Krishna Bhakti, Krishna consciousness, is simply this. First, when you meet any enlightened person, a pure devotee, they give you the information that you are not this body, you are a refugee, you have no home in the material world. You are a refugee, you cannot stay here. You have a lease on this body, and it's going to run out, and then you'll be evicted. And then like a refugee, you'll have to go in another body, and you'll be evicted from there also. No place to rest, no place to call your home. So when we learn these things, then also we'll also hear that there's another world, which is our home. That world is pure and full of happiness. There's no distress there at all. Then this, when we accept this idea, when we learn that the soul is not meant to be engaged in selfish pursuits, but rather is meant to serve God, to serve Krishna, Supreme Lord. Then when this idea comes in our heart, that's like a seed, the seed of the desire. I want to serve Krishna. I want to serve the absolute truth. And then we'll have to water that seed. What is watering? That means hearing about Krishna. In this world, everyone is looking for happiness. And the best happiness that we can find is from relationships. That's what we really want. We want to be in love with someone who loves us so much and who is so perfect and wonderful and always full of surprises. A person who, every time we see them, they're always fresh and new and giving us inspiration. So we look for that person. But we find that we are mistaken. The person we thought had all of these qualities turned out to be a complete, fill in the missing word. So this is a fact, right? Because in this world everyone is deficient. Everyone is lacking. So if two people are starving, then what will they do? You are starving, but you meet another person who is also starving, then what will happen? Oh, they eat each other. There are many occasions. People, they are stranded in a boat, and what do they do? After some, they're friends for some time. But then after some time, they're looking at each other and thinking. So in this world, all are like this. They enter relationship for what? To fulfill the hole in their heart. But the other person also has a hole in his heart. So then they begin to destroy each other. So we have to find that person whose heart is full and can fill your heart. Who is that? That is Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is so beautiful that every time you see Krishna, you think that you never saw him before. He plays upon a flute, has very long curling hair. God is not an old man in the sky with a long white beard. Everyone thinks God is an old man. But I ask you, if you were God, would you be an old man? If you could do anything, if you had all kinds of powers, you could make the impossible possible, and you were God, then what would you do? Would you be an old man? Of course not. You'd be a teenager. So, God is a teenager. Everyone's trying to be teenage, doing exercises, I don't want to grow old, having a facelift, putting on makeup, trying to hide the wrinkles, dyeing their hair. Why? Everyone wants to be teenage. This age is very good. So, Supreme Personality of Godhead, He is so beautiful and attractive and eternally young. He can sing and dance and play. He knows so many jokes and riddles. He can bind your heart so tightly that you cannot forget Him. Even at night you cannot sleep. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So beautiful. So, when a person hears about Krishna, then this desire comes. I serve so many people. I serve my teacher, I serve my parents, I serve my boss at work, I serve my dog. And all of them, none of them could give me happiness. So now, I'll serve Krishna. So this desire is like a seed. And when we hear more and more about Krishna, it begins to grow. The feeling of service begins to grow. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna himself, he gave a teaching. How to get from here to planet Golok, the spiritual world. How to go from here to there. How can we hitch a ride and get to that destination? Oh, this is the process. First you have this idea. I want to serve Krishna, the Supreme Lord. Then after that, associate with pure devotees. Hear from them. And gradually this desire will grow. And as you engage in meditating upon Krishna through the chanting of His name, there's a mantra, we were chanting it before. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Krishna has put all of His power and everything in this name. This mantra is no different from Him, even though we may not understand it now. So if even an ordinary person begins to chant this mantra and meditate and associate with pure devotees and hear about Krishna, this feeling starts to grow. It's like a plant. You know Jack and the Beanstalk? You know? You have Jack and the Beanstalk in America? I don't know. Yeah? Don't tell me. He was from New York, right? He was American. Yeah. Okay. Sam and the Beanstalk, okay. So, you heard of Sam and the Beanstalk? He planted one seed and it grew up through the sky. It went beyond the clouds. Then he climbed up it and he came to another kingdom. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told a similar story. He said that this seed of desire to serve Krishna will grow just like one beanstalk. And it will go up and it will go through the sky and it will break through the covering of the material universe. This universe is not unlimited. It has a finite area. It's like an egg. It's called Brahmanda. The egg of Brahma. Brahmanda, underneath an egg. It's the egg of Lord Brahma, Brahmanda. So that creeper, that beanstalk, it will grow and it will break through the covering of the universe and go out of this material world. What does that mean? It means that now we have a desire to serve Krishna. The desire came, but it's mixed with material moods. Sometimes we become angry. Sometimes we become irritated. Sometimes we're disturbed by people. People irk us. They just push our buttons. And we become a little bit disturbed with them. So we should not be like this. This means our mood is mixed with the atmosphere of the material world. And when we go on chanting and meditating, serving Krishna, what happens? This atmosphere clears. And when there's no more material mood in your heart, that feeling is no longer material. That means that creeper of devotion has pierced through the covering of the universe. Now it went outside of the universe. You're in this world, but your feeling has gone outside. And there it enters into Brahma. Brahma. Many people think that the Absolute Truth is like a light. It's impersonal. That the Supreme Absolute Truth has no shape. It is formless. But we should understand that the Absolute Truth is not less anything. Not formless, not shapeless, not personality-less. It's not less anything, it's more everything. The Absolute Truth has more shape, more form, more personality than anyone you ever met or saw or could even imagine. So, people think that in the material world there are forms. So spirit is the opposite of matter, so spiritual things don't have a form. But some material things also don't have a form. Like air. Air doesn't have a form, it's everywhere. So just because something doesn't have a form doesn't make it spiritual. And if something doesn't have a form, then you can bet your bottom dollar that this is not the Absolute Truth, because the Absolute Truth is complete. How can it not have anything? It must have everything. Everything must be present there. So, when a person's mood is pure, but they have not realized the form of God, then it's considered that their mood has entered into the spiritual space. It will have to go higher. And there it comes to the planets, the spiritual planets, which are called Vaikuntha. In those spiritual planets, God is there, and everyone knows that He is God. That is called Narayan. Have you heard of Narayan? or Vishnu. There are probably some paintings somewhere here in this room, somewhere. Okay. Probably somewhere in some books, there are pictures of Narayan. This is the form of God. He has four arms. Where? Up there. No, not like that. Huh? When your mood is free from material atmosphere and enters the spiritual world, then you can realize God. But He is great. He is powerful and everyone prays to Him. You are the Supreme Lord and the controller of all existence. Now, this is not the highest understanding. You have to go on hearing, chanting and remembering. Why? Because when you are related to God and you think, you are God, and I am just one of your endless, insignificant, tiny living entities, then when there's space between your heart and the heart of God, then you cannot become intimate with Him. You cannot have a deep love. Therefore, go on chanting, go on meditating, remembering and serving. And that mood will grow in such a way that all the idea that God is God will go away. That is also not completely pure. That should go away. And then the feeling comes that God is my friend. Or more than this, God is like my own child. Or more than this, God is my lover. God is my beloved. Many people talk about love of God. But they can never imagine that you can become the lover of God. Actually, His lover. This is a fact. So gradually, by the process of devotional service, when the mood becomes higher and higher and higher, and this mood, only one mood is in the heart now, I am beloved of Krishna. Then, what will happen? Oh, just as Jack, he climbed the beanstalk. Oh, Sam, I'm sorry, I forgot he was American. He climbed the beanstalk, and like that. In the same way, by the vehicle of this feeling, you can enter into the highest spiritual realm. This is the message of Krishna, message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you want to go to a material place, then you need a material vehicle. For example, I came to Oregon and I flew here in an airplane because this is a material place and I came by a material vehicle. But the spiritual world is composed entirely out of pure feelings. Spiritual world is made of feelings. It is Satchidananda. Sat means eternal. Chit means relation. And Ananda means the blissfulness. When the bliss and relation are mixed together, it makes bhava, transcendental feeling, emotion. So that world is made of transcendental feeling. So if you want to go to the realm of transcendental feelings, then you have to go there. Just as you go to the material place by material vehicle, you can go to the realm of transcendental feeling by the vehicle of your transcendental feelings. So it's very, very important. From today, we should make a vow. I will not let any material feeling come in my heart. No lust, no anger, no envy, no selfish desire. I will keep a spiritual feeling there. I am not this body. I am the soul. My constitutional position is to love Krishna. And He is my deep lover. He is my sweetheart. And He is so fresh and beautiful that every moment I want to serve Him. Going on chanting and meditating in this way. And also fulfilling the desire of Krishna in this world to help all of those who, due to their material feelings, are taking material bodies one after another, to help them, to give them the seed of the idea, of their true identity, and nourish that feeling so it will grow and grow and grow and go to that world. All of this is service to Krishna. If we spend our life in this way, then this powerful feeling will come, and by the vehicle of feelings, we can enter into the realm of pure transcendental love. And even, guess what? You don't even have to wait until you're dead. Most religions, it's a bit like a lottery. You know lottery? Everyone buys a ticket and then they're waiting to see if they bought the right ticket. So when they make the big draw, then someone finds out, oh, I've got that number. I won $1 million. And everyone else, they throw the ticket on the ground. Bah! Bad luck. So spiritual life is not like a lottery. Where you come and you buy your ticket. Okay, what ticket do you want? I'm going to buy the Buddhist ticket. I'm going to buy the Christian ticket. I'm going to buy the Hindu ticket, the Jain ticket, Sikh ticket. And everyone's standing around with their ticket waiting for the prize draw. What is that? Judgment Day, right? Death, the point of death. And then all of a sudden, there are millions of people, thousands of people, and they all get killed on the same day, like September the 11th, huh? So all the people, all of a sudden they're killed. And then they find out. And then one person sees, yes, I bought the right ticket. And all the others go, damn, the Mormons were right. Why? Why didn't I become a Mormon? Why didn't I become a Buddhist? Why didn't I become a Hindu or a Sikh or Christian or anything? Spiritual life is not like this, not like a gamble. You take some faith, some belief, and then when you die, you find out whether it's real. What is this? What kind of intelligent person will do this? And no. Spiritual life means right now, in this life, there should be a process whereby you can have an experience that you're going somewhere. If you're sick and you go to a doctor and he gives you some medicine, so you have a fever, vomiting, a rash on your skin, so you take the medicine and you just take it, yeah, for 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 10 weeks, 1 month, 20 months, 2 years, like that. You're still vomiting, you still have a fever, you still have this rash all over your body. Then what will you do? Wait until you're dead? If a doctor gives you medicine, then when you take it, then there should be some signs. Your fever should go away, at least your temperature should go down a little bit once you take some medicine. Yeah? Stop vomiting, at least. Yeah? And your rash is starting to clear. And as you're taking it, all the symptoms are going away. So in the same way, if there's a real genuine spiritual process, when you start to follow it, then something should happen, should be going somewhere. So in the same way, those who come into the line of Krishna Bhakti, devotion to Krishna, as soon as you begin to chant, as soon as you begin to associate with devotees, then you feel something's happening. Something's happening. Your heart is moving. All the mature atmosphere of anger and lust, attachment, the mind being out of control and wandering here and there, frustration and dissatisfaction, it all starts to dissipate, to disappear. If you chant so much, if you can spend only, there are 24 hours in the day, if you can pass only 2 hours,